Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people stories and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, together with my co-host Ann Kinzel, who is joining us from her home via Zoom in our ongoing special COVID-19 local coverage, forging ahead together into the great unknown.
Yes, thanks for joining us. We'll be starting this hour on the government side of things with Representative Dave Dio for the Iowa House District 49 in Nevada. We'll also be getting some updates about Iowa State University, and then Mark Lambert, our city attorney in Ames, will stop by to describe how the city is carrying out its affairs legally during these unusual times.
Representative Dio, thank you for joining us via Zoom today. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm feeling healthy.
Good. Good. And Representative Dio is joining us as well via Zoom. So if you hear a slight delay, it's because technology is trying to keep up with us here. Please brief us on the most recent governor's declarations and help us to understand what she's telling us.
Well, as you know, as we move through this thing, and of course, it's kind of uncharted territory. She continues to update some of the things that the state government has been doing. Some of the things that discussed with her latest proclamation, where there was a discussion in the proclamation about IPERS let me pull some of this up and see what all was in there. County hospitals being allowed now to borrow funds. There's some concern, I think, about some hospitals that now that they can't do elective surgeries, that there's going to be some financial issues, especially for smaller hospitals. And then there was also an update with the bar and restaurant requirements that she had done previously. Those were extended. Some of the changes that were made as far as bars and restaurants being able to staying closed, but being able to sell things, you know, drive up basic, that sort of thing. And then
so
also,
they will, restaurants will still be allowed to sell curbside.
Yes, yeah, that was something that had an expiration date on it, and she extended that. I don't know what the previous date was, but it's been extended to April 7th. I assume she'll continue to extend that as needed.
While the legislature is suspended, what work is going on between representatives, and what role do Republican representatives have in this interim period?
Well, of course, we're sort of on temporary close down right now. We've got passed enough of a budget to get through August if needed on an emergency basis. We've given the governor some discretion and authority to use some emergency funds as needed. We're basically just collecting information, you know, talking to constituents, emails. We get regular updates from both leadership in the Iowa House, and so we later today we're going to have a conference committee meeting with all the members of the House Republican members to discuss what's being done, and also give us a chance to ask questions that we may have of leadership, and so that's basically what we're doing during this period where we're still staying pretty busy. And phone calls to myself.
And we are during the normal session, you're in the state house with each other, Republican and Democrat, so you're in physical proximity. How do you stay in touch with members of the other party during this time?
Well, I mean, you know, you could obviously by phone if you, you know, if needed. We're not really passing anything. So right now, you know, most of the discussions on policy issues have been, we're not really talking about those. It's really mostly, reviewing issues with what the governor is doing. And at some point, if there's a need for some input from the legislature for us to basically, have to vote on something, it'll probably be the state fiscal committee. which that one is a bipartisan committee. So we.
Are you, David Dio, managing the, getting together with the other legislators on a regular basis?
No, we haven't seen each other since, 2 weeks ago, this past Monday. Other than I maybe one or two members, you know, but it's not a meeting. It's just, you know, we might see each other or something,
but you don't have regular phone meetings or anything like that.
Uh-huh. Well, we're having, like I said, like for example, later today we have a conference call meeting, which will be all of us House Republicans will be, a phone meeting, and those have been running maybe once a week or something like that. Usually it's just email updates.
Mm-hmm. So what are you hearing from your constituents? You're the representative for the area that covers Nevada and surrounding areas. What are you hearing from your constituents?
Well, there's concerns about some of the businesses that are closed, that some people are out of work, obviously. There's been questions about unemployment and concerns about which businesses should be open, which ones shouldn't be open, and you know, things like that. There's been some of those kind of discussions. We have a lot of it is just emails, you know, on different issues. Some of them are kind of, you know, basically people go onto a website and it's, you know, sort of a form type email, but so we get some of those. I've been trying to respond to a few of those, because they do send their contact information. So I had some long conversations with, had a long conversation with, somebody who's a nurse working down at Broadlawns, but lives in my district. Both informational for me, learning from them about the problems that they're having or what they're seeing, and me trying to update them on what's going on and what they may need to know.
Representative Dio, for those of you who are listening, we apologize. We have odd sound this morning, and hope you can bear with us because we're very pleased to have Representative Dio take some time to speak with us. You yourself are a farmer, if I understand correctly, and we've heard a lot about businesses and municipal issues. Is there anything that's unique to what's happening right now to those of us who are living on farms that, how that's affecting folks, the COVID crisis?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you it's easier to isolate if you're out on a farm. So
this is true.
So that's,
there is that.
Yeah, at least we've had some nice weather. The last few days I've gotten some work done outside. We planted some alfalfa here a couple days ago, and it was beautiful weather for doing that. I've got some neighbors that are out spreading fertilizer, you know, to get ready for the planting season coming up. So there's some of those things are, some field work is getting done. So that's, you know, as far as farmers are concerned, I don't think going to affect their work very much. Most of the related businesses, you know, that they rely on for supplies and things like that are open. Sometimes there may be some complications as far as whether they go to the store or not. They may have to call ahead, you know, order parts or things like that on the phone before they show up and have the, you know, so the stuff can be left outside.
So,
and some things like that. So there's some changes, but more or less kind of operation is normal.
Uh huh. So, what kind of zoned out with the sound was, you said people had to call ahead, for ordering supplies and.
Yeah, I know at least in one of the parts, places that I'm aware of locally here, they want you to call ahead, you know, get the part ordered before you show up, and then they'll probably set it outside the door, you know, for you. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have to go inside the store and interact with the employees. There are cases, I think, where they'll open it up, you know, if you have a reason that you need to come in, but they're trying to avoid that if possible.
Mm-hmm. So Representative Dale, you, You're a real live farmer, so I have to ask you this question. I come from the Central Valley of California, where most farming depends on a huge degree of migrant labor. Mm-hmm. And so now there's an anticipation that that's going to be a big problem moving forward. Here in Iowa, are there any kind of farming operations that rely on migrant labor? And how does that work? How do you see that going down?
Yeah, very little. There are some livestock operations. For example, dairy relies fairly heavily on migrant labor for the, you know, daily milking chores and stuff for dairy cows. Sometimes you'll see some migrant labor, a little bit maybe, when for the production of seed corn. Not too much. I mean, a lot of that's done with machines now. Some of the either cattle or hogs, you know, some use migrant labor, but a lot mm-hmm. don't. So
you don't see any interruption coming in the summer or anything like that from that kind of a labor force?
No, it's not the same as what you're talking about in Central Valleys. I've been out there where vegetable or fruit farming, where they're, you know, have to have mass groups of people because the crop may be matured a certain number of days and it has to be handled by hand. And that sort of thing. We don't have that here. There may be a few, you know, fruit vegetable farms here, but most of them are fairly small.
Representative Deo, what would you like to convey to your constituents here on the radio as a representative during this time?
I'd like to compliment some of the people with state, Iowa Department of Public Health and the governor. I think they've done a really good job of staying, up to speed on what's going on. The briefings that we get from the governor are, probably the same ones that the press is getting, but they're, you know, they're pretty detailed as far as the number of cases and which counties are having outbreaks, where, you know, all those kind of things. And so they've been very up to date on it and very, on top of it, I think. I think one of the other things that we have an advantage here is we got ahead of this before it really got out of control ahead of time. So, New York was already having multiple deaths before they started doing anything. And, here in Iowa, we really, all of the things that we're going through right now pretty much started at the same time we had our first case actually just spread from person to person here in Iowa. So I think we have a chance here maybe to be far enough ahead of this that we won't see the same type of thing happening here that happened.
So what's your direct message to the folks in District 49? What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, just as far as a direct message, I'd say, you know, keep on, trying to self-isolate, you know, 6 feet of separation, cleaning, all of the things that we've heard over and over, you know, on, if you've watched some of the TV, stuff that's coming out, you know, we want to make sure that, we try to, and a lot of this is really, I think, not necessarily, probably not going to stop every case, but we don't want to have so many cases all at once. Hospitals and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Any last words before we head out?
No, I think this has been interesting. This is the first time I've done a radio interview on Zoom. that's been a little bit different. I've done plenty on the phone before, but, this is a little bit different. But I just would like everybody to basically, you know, have patience through this period, and I think we'll get through this.
Well, thank you, and I like the photograph behind you on the wall.
Yeah, that's actually an aerial picture of the farm, so, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, all right.
Hi, everybody. This is Neil Diamond, and I know we're going through a rough time right now, but I love you, and I think maybe if we sing together, well, we'll just feel a little bit better. Give it a try, okay? Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. came the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Reaching out, don't touch me, I won't touch you, sweet Caroline. Good times never seem so good.
And that is Sweet Caroline, the coronavirus version by Neil Diamond, covering himself in the age of COVID-19. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Response Radio.
Welcome to Local Talk, Jonathan Wickert. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Jonathan Wickert serves as Senior Vice President and Provost at Iowa State University, overseeing the university's Division of Academic Affairs.
Jonathan, so, could you move a little bit closer to your computer? Thank you.
So Iowa State is back in session.
Well, we are. Right now we're teaching over 6,000 classes online for our students.
And so how is that going? How is this new world of COVID online instruction playing itself out?
Well, it's obviously been a big adjustment. You know, over the space of about 10 days, we moved to an entirely virtual instruction mode. And that's, you know, when you think about it, that's the biggest change, the fastest, most complex change we've ever had at the university. But, you know, what I'll tell you is people are really stepping up. Faculty have had to redesign classes. You know, students have had to, you know, learn how to take a class online that they were taking in person just a couple weeks ago.
For many of our listeners that didn't go to school in an online world, can you give us the sort of 10-second capsule of what it means to take a class online?
Well, we have some very sophisticated software called a learning management system. And you know, this can be used for faculty to put course materials like a filing cabinet. It can have discussion boards where there can be interactive questions by students with the faculty. And of course, faculty can upload videos of their lectures. You know, we have faculty using GoPro cameras to video some of the work they're doing in their laboratory so students can see that as well.
University supported the faculty in this shift. What kind of resources are available to them to help them in this tremendously compressed period of time change?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and you know, I got to tell you, I'm just so proud of our faculty for really stepping up to this challenge. You know, not just in teaching online, but also in shifting to working remotely. Right, that's a big change as well. On our campus, we have an organization called the Center for Excellence in Learning and Teaching. And, you know, as soon as we knew that we were going to be moving to an online format, we started providing faculty with information and materials on not just the technology, but the pedagogy. What are the best practices for teaching in an online way? And, you know, we're just trying to give faculty flexibility at this time. We've offered extensions of the tenure clock and really just a philosophy of understanding that it's hard working from home, particularly when faculty might have young children and they have, you know, child care responsibilities, schooling responsibilities, maybe caring for another family member. And so we're trying to really support faculty in this new normal of work-life balance.
At the end of the day, teaching is about students. What are you hearing from the students?
Well, you know, a lot of different reactions. I think students understand the importance of the university having moved to an online format. Interestingly, you know, some students really thrive in this environment. You know, they're younger than we are. They've grown up as digital natives. They're very comfortable with screens and technology. And in many cases, you know, we're hearing about students who might have been reluctant to ask a question in a large class setting, but are more comfortable asking those questions and interacting online. So that's positive. You know, we also know that we have a lot of students from, you know, rural communities in particular, where they might not have good internet access. Broadband access, the so-called digital divide, is an issue. And so over the past several days, we've been trying to get more information out to our students about alternative ways that they can get internet access.
Now, you mentioned earlier that this change happened in such an amazingly short period of time, and the faculty and the university to be congratulated on that. Lots of people are learning new ways of doing things. ISU is a research university. How are you capturing some of the things that the faculty is learning for perhaps future years?
No, it's a great question. And, you know, it's what we do at a university is we, you know, we want to learn, we experiment, we try new things. Sometimes those work, sometimes they don't, but either way you learn from them. We will be surveying faculty here at the end of the semester. To find out, you know, how it went, how we, what we can learn from this experience. You know, interestingly, I think one of the reasons why we were able to spin up the transformation of our courses to be fully virtual is, you know, it was a year or two ago when we had the polar vortex and we closed the university for a couple days. And really at that time, our team started thinking, you know, if we had to make a big shift like this, what would we do? And I think that groundwork of what we learned a couple of years ago helped us in this particular instance as well.
The university always operates, and it seems even more so in the last decade, in a difficult financial environment. Do you see this kind of online teaching being something that the university might focus on in the future, though to less exclusivity, to help the bottom line, shall we say?
We've always offered a lot of courses online. We have, you know, some degree programs that are online. All of our colleges and many departments have a pretty strong portfolio of online online courses, and that's important for you know, distance learners, adult learners, but also increasingly for students who are on campus and just want to take a hybrid mix of in-person and online classes. You know, we really want to get back to normal. We are.
Yes, we are.
We would love to get back to normal. We're a residential campus. And, you know, we know all of the learning that takes place, you know, face to face. And the learning that takes place in groups and teams. We are known as a hands-on practical university, students in laboratories, in the field, working on studios and design projects. And those kinds of experiences, those laboratory type experiences, you just can't do those online. I'm sure that when the COVID-19 situation passes, we will be better at online than we were before. We will have learned from it and grown. But we would love nothing more than to get back to normal with all our students on campus and all the great learning that happens in person.
Now, I know that you are the university's Division of Academic Affairs leader, but I'd like you, if you could, to answer this question from perhaps three perspectives. So I'd like to know, what is the most difficult the university faculty and staff have faced in moving to this online teaching modality?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest shift is not some, the biggest challenge is not so much online, but it's just all of this uncertainty. You know, I mean, we're all feeling it. I'm feeling it. You're feeling it. Everybody in the community feels it. You know, what's coming next? You know, we're still on the upslope of this epidemic, and we're worried. You know, I mean, we're worried about each other. We're worried about our community. And I think that uncertainty and the fear, you know, of a virus that you can't actually see, you know, and you don't really know what you can touch and what you can't touch, and social distance, you know, is important. We all need to be practicing that, but that's new. That's new for us.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I've never seen Iowa State look the way it does right now. It is completely empty. When you go past the university, there is not a soul on the sidewalks. I've never seen that in my entire life.
Yeah. We talked about the difficulty. I'm curious, is what has been the most pleasant, if that's a word we're not seeming to use much these days, but the most pleasant surprise that has come through this?
Well, I'll tell you what's most pleasant, but I'm not surprised by it. And that has been just the roll up your sleeves attitude. You know, I think what I'm impressed by every day, in talking with faculty, staff, students, community members, is just this attitude that we're in this together. We've faced challenges before. This is maybe a bigger challenge than we faced in an awfully long time. But we're just going to roll up our sleeves. We're going to improvise. We're going to adapt, and we're going to get through this together. So that is something that I am extremely, extremely proud of. Despite the challenges of working remotely, despite the complexity of balancing family life with work life, everybody knows we just got to do this, and eventually it's going to be over. And I think that hope is, I think, a very important thing for us all to keep in mind as well.
Well, Jonathan Wickard, Provost at Iowa State University, that leads us to a question that we've heard from the community. Many people have expressed concern about international students who remain in our community and at Iowa State. What can you tell us about how the crisis has affected these students and how the university is helping them?
Well, I can tell you that every day, in just about every discussion, we're talking about our students. That's why we exist, is to take care of our students. And, you know, it's not just the student experience in the classroom, but it's student life as well. So as you point out, we have many international students, and for them, Ames is their default home. Many of them are unable to go home due to travel restrictions, and they're concerned about their friends and family back home. You know, we have other students on our campus who are not international students, but Iowa State and Ames is their home as well. So our student affairs team, our Department of Residence, our Department of Dining, our Student Health Center, are just working around the clock, literally, to care for these students, providing meals that students can take back to their rooms. We've outfitted them with new microwaves and refrigerators. Most of our student services are available online and continue to be available. That can include counseling services, health services, career services, academic advising. And our rec department, our great rec department, is even offering online fitness classes for students as they socially distance.
And now, some of our students, Provost, who remain in Ames may have difficulty financially. They're not being able to work, certainly not on campus and things like that. Are there any resources available specifically for undergraduates and graduate students who may be experiencing some financial constraints or difficulty at this time?
Yeah, well, again, a big partnership with the Iowa State University Foundation, which has started a special fundraising campaign from from our very generous friends and donors who understand that that there are new financial pressures on students and on the university. And that fundraising, you know, we're always raising scholarship funds for students. And this is just an additional opportunity for our friends and donors to help out at a critical time of need.
And now, what does the money go to?
Well, it'll go to a range of new unexpected costs that have come up as because of the COVID-19 response. You know, this began with students who were studying abroad. That was the very first impact that we saw, where we had to bring students home from studying abroad in Asia, and then of course Italy, and of course now all countries. In many cases, those students have incurred additional expenses associated with the travel and study abroad. You also have students now who may have been having a part-time job. You know, they may have been working in a restaurant, and they may have been laid off. So there's all kinds of financial needs, I think, that students are experiencing now, and we want to do our best that we can to support them.
In one of the sort of bizarre life goes on things in America as we traverse this COVID-19 crisis has been the issue of the U.S. Census. Getting resources from the federal government is going to be important moving forward, and census data is going to determine in many ways the resources that we receive in Ames, both related to COVID and other things. How is the university helping with the effort to get students to participate in the census as this crisis unfolds?
Right. Well, you know, we certainly know and understand how important the 2020 census is for our community. And really for quite a while, the university has been working with our community partners to encourage students to claim Ames. At the same time, with respect to the census, we know that, you know, COVID-19 is hitting at a bad time with respect to the timing of the census. The good news, so to speak, is that there are a lot of other communities, a lot of other college towns that are in the same boat. I think we have to remember that every university, like Iowa State, is going through the same experience right now. And you know, I would hope that the federal government would take into account these circumstances as they receive our numbers.
Well, are you taking steps to make sure the students actually do say that they usually live in Ames on April 1st?
Yeah, we've been communicating that out to students.
How are you doing that? You're emailing them and saying, please fill out the census? Or how are you making sure that they even get the census?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So in closing, Provost, can you share with us some of your advice, words, thoughts about this as we move forward?
Well, you know, I sent a communication yesterday to all of our faculty on campus, reflecting on a lot of the same issues that we've been talking about here this morning. And I guess I just share with your listeners that we're gonna all work this problem together. We're in it together. We'll do the best we can, and we're gonna keep the overarching principle that the most important thing we can do is to look out for the health and safety of our faculty, staff, students, and our community members. And there's going to be thousands of questions and thousands of issues that we're going to be working through in the coming days and weeks and months. But we're going to be coming back to that principle as our main value.
Well, thank you, Jonathan Wickert, Senior Vice President and Provost at Iowa State University. Thank you for answering so many of our questions, and we hope that maybe in a few weeks we can ask you to answer some more questions as things unfold.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Is this a fever? Is this just allergies? Caught in a lockdown, no escape from the family. Don't touch your eyes, just hand sanitize quickly. I'm just a poor nasty spread, even though I wash my hands laying low. I look out the window, the cup doesn't look flatter to me. Mama, life was so much fun, but now I've got this unforgiving flame. Mama, ooh, I didn't mean to make them die. If I'm not back to work this time tomorrow, carry on, carry on, as if people didn't matter.
Coronavirus Rhapsody by Queen. And this is Local Talk, COVID Response Radio at KHOI for Central Iowa. Susan Guiazda has been working with KHOI these past few weeks as the Public Relations Officer for Ames to inform you about municipal matters during the crisis. Thank you so much for doing this, Susan. And today you've brought Mark Lambert, City Attorney, with you.
Yeah, good morning. It's good to be here. I did bring Mark Lambert with me today because as we move into a new phase of doing business at the City of Ames, some of the things that we continue to do are look for ways to provide services online. And part of being a transparency government means obeying all the what we call sunshine law rules and policies that the state of Iowa has. Being transparent is extremely important to the way that we do business. And so Mark's office has been really busy advising different departments as they, you know, move towards this new service model. And I think that sort of the thought process behind that is really sort of important to understand. And so I was hoping Mark would share some of those thoughts with us today.
Well, this is exciting. As a retired member of the bar, I'm excited to hear about what Mark has to say about keeping business alive during a virus response. So, Mark, how does the city keep going about its legal business during this crisis?
Sure. Good morning, Ann. Can you hear me okay?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, I'm kind of new to this whole Zoom thing, so as a lot of us are. You know, it's been an interesting transition and learning experience, I think, for everybody. As Susan mentioned, the state of Iowa has an open meetings law that requires that meetings be open to the public, and then with some certain types of things on a city council agenda, public hearings, we have to have an opportunity for the public to give input. Once City Hall closed, and that's one of the early things that the city manager's office here and consultation with the mayor and council decided to do was to close City Hall to the public so that we only have city employees here. So we had to figure out how we're going to hold these meetings. And there is a provision in the Iowa Open Meetings Law for having, electronic meetings. That's supposed to be only when it's impossible or impractical to hold an in-person hearing or meeting. And so we've, but I think given the current circumstance, impractical fits, and we meet that standard. So so we had to look at the law. We had to figure out how to do some things. First of all, we had one city council meeting coming up fairly quickly. So we did a telephone conference call meeting. We broadcast it in all the usual places that we broadcast meetings, online and the city's website and our YouTube channel and on cable channel. And so we did that, but we had to have a way for the public to participate. So we kept giving out both an email address and a telephone number. And so literally people could email or telephone in, we'd take a message and then either read the email or read the message from the phone call into the record at the council meeting. And that's how we complied with the portion of the law that requires that public hearings be open to the public. So we usually have a public comment period at every council meeting too. And so we use that same method. It looks like we're going to be hopefully transitioning to doing a Zoom meeting, and we're still trying to figure that out. But with every step of these things, we have to take a look at the state law, figure out exactly how we're going to comply with that, whether it's possible. And fortunately, somebody was forward thinking and adding electronic meetings to the open meetings law a long time ago. So we are able to do those.
So clearly Ames isn't the only municipality in Iowa. Do you get, do you talk or get advice or on following certain procedures, even very practical advice from neighboring communities?
Sure. And, I'm in contact frequently with the, other, city attorneys in the larger cities, in Iowa. There's also a separate email list of, really any city attorney at all in Iowa. The League of Cities, which is our association, participates in those, the legal counsel from the league. So, we do a lot of back and forth and chewing things over and, hey, what do you think about this? Do you think this would comply if we did it this way? And, so the consultation that goes on, I think I've probably, emailed my colleagues, around the state more often in the last 2 weeks than I have, in the last 2 years.
Well, I have to ask, one of the things that city attorneys or county attorneys have to do is give informal or formal legal opinions. So in the last couple of weeks, what is the strangest legal opinion that you've been asked to provide?
I think you stumped me, Ann. I can't think of a strange one.
Mark, I did ask you if, as we practice our Zoom meetings, if that would be considered a public meeting.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And, okay. And that probably is the strangest, but there is an easy answer to that, that, in order to, have a meeting under the open meetings law, you have to have a majority of the governmental body. So a majority of the council. And then, another factor in that law is that they have to be deliberating on some sort of a public policy matter. So as long as they're not deliberating, they can all be together. And for example, there may be social events where all the council members are there. And so they're not violating the open meetings law as long as they're not talking shop. If we're just on a training session on the Zoom, which we're going to be doing soon, then, as long as they don't deliberate, and I will remind them ahead of time not to deliberate on anything. And frankly, having been through a training session on Zoom recently, you don't really have time to talk about anything else, but figuring out what you're doing. That's probably the strangest, not particularly strange, but a good question.
But it's interesting that you are telling us that you're really not running into a whole lot that's surprising you that much. So even though we're in the strangest of times right now, for you, it's still fitting within the paradigm of the boundaries of city business and how you usually do things?
Yeah, and it's really just making sure that the way we're doing it, it is still complying with the law. And, but the questions come up like, okay, we're going to do the city council meeting on the phone. And, but how do we handle public hearings where people have a right under the law to show up at public hearings and give comment, on various things. So we had to provide a method for doing that. So it's ask the legal question. I say, look, we have to provide some way for the public to give input, and we cannot just tell them to email us in advance. They have to have a way to give input during the meeting. And so then the other staff in the city figures out how to do that. And I work along with them.
But there's what I'm hearing you saying is that there's really nothing about this process of social separation that that takes you outside of the, you know, your legal parameters, that you haven't come up with any real dilemmas yet in terms of not being able to fulfill the law?
Yeah, that's correct. We've come up with some maybe minor dilemmas, you know, but I think we've been able to figure all of them out. And again, it just helps to be in consultation with the other city attorneys around the state, because they're all facing the same situations, and people have, you know, an answer to one thing and I might have an answer to something else. And we're doing a lot of sharing of methods that we're using to comply with the law in these unusual times. And,
one thing,
you know, but we managed to, you know, figure it out, and we've done a good job, I think, of moving ahead. But I think you're right. There have been no major dilemmas yet. Just lots of little minor issues, and trying to figure out how to comply with the law while we do things in a new way.
Well, you're lucky. One of the things that's been a hot topic in some circles has been this concern that Iowa is not doing enough to, sort of, as they say, get ahead of the curve and not order people to basically stay at home, and except for emergencies, as other jurisdictions are doing around the country. Some mayors on the east side of the state have called on the governor to do that. What can you tell us about the law that would allow a city or not allow a city to declare its own state of emergency and require tougher restrictions?
Well, that was a topic of conversation amongst the city attorneys when, a couple weeks ago, we started talking about that. The governor then asked the attorney general, Tom Miller, for an opinion. The attorney general's office issued an informal opinion that said that only the governor has the authority to issue a stay-at-home or shelter-in-place order, and that local governments did not have that authority unless the governor delegated that authority to the local governments. And now I know there are some city attorneys around Iowa that disagree with that legal analysis from the attorney general's office. I think it's correct. I think it'd be better if local governments could make those decisions. I like local control and local decisions. So I think the state of the law in Iowa is that the governor has that authority. And so I'm in agreement with the attorney general's opinion. Another option is that people are asking the governor if she won't issue a shelter in place order, if she would allow, delegate that authority and allow the cities to, mayors to, declare that. And, I don't know if that will be a step that she takes at some point, but people are asking her for that.
Okay. And, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. We have to move on in a minute, so I just wanted to give a minute more if there's anything else you'd like to convey to, our public while you're on the radio. And thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much. Just one final thing I'd like to say, that, you know, part of our job as a city and with the law enforcement police here is to enforce the governor's order on the business closures and the gatherings of no more than 10 people. We're trying to be friendly as we go about doing that, and reasonable, but we do have an order from the governor that certain businesses are closed, and we do have to enforce that. So I just would ask that everyone please understand that we're required to enforce that.
Thank you.
For people's health and safety.
For people's health and safety.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mark Lambert, city attorney. And thank you, Susan Guiasta, for all the work you're doing with us. We really appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI, and Anna Banana is here. Hi, Anna Banana. Hi, Ms. Banana.
Hi, yes, Anna Banana is in the house with the heart-to-heart messages for the day. So I'm going to start with asking if any of the KHOI listeners have heard of this Greek philosopher named Epictetus. And the reason why I ask is that my sister and I, who's younger, teaches at Grandview University, brought up his name during a phone conversation. And thank goodness we are practicing spatial distancing, so she couldn't see me do a quick Google search to hide the fact that I have no idea who she was talking about. Now, I'm sure that Grandview students and Iowa State students know who this is, and probably also Provost Wickard, but I do not. So, thanks to Wikipedia, I discovered that Epictetus believed that all external events are beyond our control. We should only accept them calmly and dispassionately, whatever happens. However, individuals are responsible for their own actions, which they can examine and control through rigorous self-discipline. So how interesting to think about what he believed back then in the light of the days that we live in now. External events beyond our control. Can we all say COVID-19 pandemic? Yeah, hello. And yet responsible for our own actions that can be controlled through rigorous self-discipline. That certainly sounds like voluntary spatial distancing to me. And no wonder my sister brought him into our coronavirus conversation and why I should bother learning more about this first century existentialist philosopher. Although, to be fair, Epictetus also said, do not laugh much or often or unrestrainably. Okay, Dr. Little Sister Smarty Pants, not a guy I want to hang out with, but an interesting guy, and I encourage you to Google him if you get the chance. So when I think about what we do and we don't have control over, it makes me think about another recent conversation in which we discussed how to balance generosity, philanthropy, with uncertainty, prudence. In other words, should I be giving to nonprofit organizations when my own financial future may be in jeopardy? So with this in mind, I offer the following heart-to-heart messages. The first one is from Tom Lockhart, who just started as the development director for the Boys and Girls Club of Story County. And he wrote a heart-to-heart message on behalf of all nonprofit organizations. His message reads as follows. During difficult times, we all seem to come together as Americans to take on the challenges we face. One of the best ways to assist our community is by supporting our local nonprofits. Nonprofit organizations provide assistance and support to the most vulnerable segments of our community. Yet many nonprofits in Story County are being forced to cut back on the services they provide and the staff they employ. I encourage all of you who are in a position to do so to reach out to a nonprofit which shares your passion. Donations of time, goods, or monetary assets are crucial to these organizations at this time of crisis. Your support will allow our local nonprofits to carry on their good work to benefit those in most need. So please give what you can to help your neighbors. Thank you, Tom, for your heartfelt message. The Boys and Girls Club of Story County is closed from March 17 to April 10 or until further notice. But you can learn more about the Boys and Girls Club of Story County by visiting www.bgcstorycounty.org. So I met Tom because he recently became a member of the Ames Noon Kiwanis Club meetings. And speaking of the Ames Noon Kiwanis Club, the board was forced to deliver this email to our April presenters. On behalf of our club, we are sorry that we must cancel all programs for the month of April. I know that you understand the reason why we're forced into this decision to safeguard the health of our community. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a presenter, and we will all wish for your safety, health, and happiness in the coming months. So one of the email recipients was Hope Metheny, YSS's Transitional Housing Program Manager, who is scheduled to speak to their group this month. And the reason why she was asked to present to the group is because her organization received a grant from the Kiwanis Club. And so she sent the following heart-to-heart message. Dear Ames Noon Kiwanis Club, thanks for letting me know. My office is right next to Jerry's. Now, Jerry Derner works for YSS, but she also serves on the board of the Ames Noon Kiwanis Club. So when we're all back up and running, I can set up a time with her. I'm even more grateful for the grant vetting now. I went out and used some of the funds yesterday, and it just feels right giving incoming clients brand new bedding during this time, especially pillows. Hygiene and getting people into their own housing where they can at least isolate in their own bedrooms is so helpful in limiting the spread of COVID-19. Thank you so much for these funds and putting them so that I can put them to great use. So thank you so much, Hope, and what a lovely name, as I think that hope is what we're all about these days, hoping for better days ahead. So today's heart-to-the-heart messages are linked together by the passion and people of the purpose-driven work of nonprofit organization. In the 5th century BCE, philanthropy meant love of humanity. Today, philanthropy means generosity in all its forms and is often defined as giving gifts of time, talent, and treasure to help make life better for other people. And I say that love and generosity are the way to move us into a better and stronger community post-COVID-19. So if you would like to respond to these messages, I invite you to text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. Or if you have a heart-to-heart message, you can text me again at 515-809-0077 or email me at khoiradio@gmail.com with the subject line heart-to-heart. We hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community. And from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for listening and send our love out to each of you.
Thank you, Anna Banana. And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, here together with Ann Kinzel. And thank you for listening to us and joining the various folks from our community who are reaching out to connect with you through the radio. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. And also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later on our website at khoifm.org, which has been dormant for the last week, but we are making the repairs necessary to bring these programs back to you online. So thanks for your patience with us. Remember that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org as well.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Neil Diamond singing his new version of Sweet Caroline and Coronavirus Rhapsody by Queen. Everybody's got a cover of something these days. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Is this a fever? Is this just allergies? Caught in a lockdown, no escape from the family. Don't touch your eyes, just hand sanitize quickly. Spread, even though I wash my hands laying low, I look out the window. The cup doesn't look flatter to me. Dead. Mama, life was so